Session number 26359.
Colonel Robbins, Reel 3. So, you were told about D-Day, what, the day before, or?
Yes, 2 or 3 days before. No, I'd say the day before. No, I almost seem to remember hearing about it. We have now landed. And of course, we didn't land on D-Day, my lot. We were a heavy division, and we had heavy vehicles and that sort of thing. And we did not go in with the leading divisions. And my division, the infantry left from. Straight from Portsmouth or somewhere, or the south coast somewhere, went straight across in somehow. And I, as second in command, went with the vehicles to Tilbury, where we had to take the heavy stuff.
So you drove down to Tilbury.
We drove down to Tilbury.
What were the scenes like there?
Absolutely incredible. We went through the East End, and I remember I always regarded the East Enders as vicious Cockney people, but they'd been through an awful lot in the war. They'd been bashed by the Germans. But when we went through, never were we greeted with such fellowship. They threw the few remaining cigarettes they had, chocolates to the troops. Did you want anything else? Tea, running along beside us. Marvellous people, the East Enders. I didn't realize it, never having been there. And we landed up on the side of the docks, Tilbury Docks, and there were some tents there. And that night, suddenly, overhead came aircraft, and then loud explosions. And we thought, my goodness, the Germans have. It was the Germans, they had found us, but it wasn't airplanes, it was the V1s, the first V1s, buzz bombs, I think they were called. And they were coming over. And they'd fly over, and the engine would stop, and then you knew they would the thing would drop. Then you'd hear the bang. Really rather unnerving. We were glad to go away. Then we got on our ships the next day and went off. The storms were terrific. The sea was high. The channel was rough. Everyone got seasick. And it took us a day or two to get from Tilbury to Normandy.
Do you remember the scene as you came towards Normandy? Was it in daylight or?
It was dawn, I remember, and the whole bay was full of ships. The Mulberry Harbour was in operation, and it was D-Day was. It was about 4 or 5 days after D-Day. And I remember one ship about 500 yards from us suddenly hitting a mine and going up. And that was our reconnaissance regiment, half of whom were drowned in front of us. And their vehicles went down. The reconnaissance regiment is a very important part of a division. They are the ones who go ahead. And so we had the first few weeks of battle without them because there weren't any.
That must have been a real sort of morale sapper
Well, it was a
to see
no.
that
It's,
go
well,
down.
of course, it was. Meanwhile, the big battleships were there as well. And every now and again, they would fire inland, supporting the troops. So it was a very invigorating scene. And we landed on the Arromanche. The beach was cleared of dead, and we merely went in for about a mile or so, half a mile, where we met up with our infantry. An amazing logistic feat for one lot, and every regiment did that. They met up.
And you met up, and did you sort of stay together overnight, or?
Yes, we then combined, and there was the battalion, the whole battalion together, ready to go forward.
How peaceful or otherwise were things round about? What could you hear?
Can you switch off for a minute?
So, were things fairly noisy round about you, or?
They were surprisingly quiet, although we could hear the battle some miles in front, 3 or 4 miles. And I remember my batman, who had been chosen for me in Rye, coming with me, and he said, it was about... He said, "I've got a very good breakfast for you, sir." I said, "Well, the men are all having their bully beef or whatever." "No," he said, I've got into a farmhouse here, and I speak French, being a Channel Islander. And come in." And he had eggs and bacon and cream and cheese. And he was very friendly with the French farmer's wife there. And I was astonished, but I had it. And then the next day we were ordered to go forward. And that was the first time we started having mortar bombs around us. And they were very frightening mortars, because they were called, the soldiers called them screaming, moaning minis, because they came down six at a time with special fins attached to the bombs, which made a screaming noise, unnerving. And then we were getting closer to the Germans, and a bit of skirmishing.
Did you have any idea what the role of your battalion was going to be, or what the role of your company was going to be?
The role of our battalion was to take over a village from the Scots regiment, 15 Scottish were in front of us, and to form up there, ready to attack the SS. This is what we'd been trained for. And as we got nearer, so we had to dig in and go, and then to my, these bombs and things, and I looked round for my batman, and he wasn't there. And I didn't see him again for 2 days. I said, "Where have you been?" He said, "I've been helping the wounded back." So I said, "Well, you've never, that's not your job. Your job's to be here with me as my runner. And you know what your job is. We've trained." The fighting, we weren't hand-to-hand or anything like that fighting yet. But there was a lot of firing and so on. And this was the first time we had experienced it, and experiencing dead bodies around. And that day, this batman of mine shot himself through the hand and was seen doing it. Self-inflicted wound. So I sent him back to be court-martialed. And I got another batman. And I said to the sergeant major, who'd been a regular soldier for 12 years, "You chose a very bad man there. Now get another one." That sergeant major, the next day, shot himself through the foot. Also self-inflicted. This is how battle was striking some people, you see.
Even after all that preparation?
After all that and 12 years as a soldier. He was court-martialed.
Yeah. You must have been a bit alarmed by now.
We?
You must have been
well, I was astonished. Astonished more than anything. That such a thing could happen. That two regular soldiers, they're both regulars, should do this.
What do you think was going on in their head? What was lacking in their...
Fear. Otis fear. But then everyone's frightened.
But they've been trained for so long, you think they might have confidence in their abilities. To
and one of them had been on the northwest frontier and had seen action up there. Anyway, we then went in to take over a village called San Movier from the Scottish regiment, and they hadn't finished fighting. There was a battle going on, and we had to take over while the battle was going on.
What sort of terrain, what sort of situation?
A village. A village in Normandy with thick hedges surrounding it and cornfields.
And the position that you took up was where, do you remember?
In this village. Well, we merely took the village over. The Scottish regiment wanted somewhere else. And the village was strewn with dead Scotsmen and dead Germans and a lot of dead civilians. So it was a very nasty introduction to war. But we overcame it and the dead were cleared away.
How did your soldiers react? I mean, you were giving the orders and you saw that clearing the dead would be a good thing to do first, I suppose.
It wasn't necessarily a good thing to do. The French, the civilians were there, they were clearing up the mess a bit. Somehow the bodies were removed, whether they were buried or not, I don't know. But we were preparing to advance. And the next day, the colonel said to me, I want you to take a fighting patrol out into no man's land and find out if Carpique Aerodrome, which is 2 or 3 miles away, 2 kilometres, is occupied and what's in front of us. Very vague orders, I thought. And he gave me 3 or 4 Bren carriers. When I say he gave me, I was allotted. And each had 3 or 4 soldiers, you know, I carefully chose. And I had a gunner officer with me and an intelligence officer. It was a probing fighting patrol come information. The sort of thing... really, which should have been done by that reconnaissance regiment which I told you had been sunk. But I was told to do it, and I was surprised. I therefore chose these young men very carefully. And they were good.
How many did you take?
18.
What sort of qualities were you looking for? General ability?
I knew them. Yeah. I knew them already from training. And each Bren gun carrier had a machine gunner with it, and I had a wireless chap with me and another private soldier. And we went off through the cornfields, and slowly I began to wonder, where are these Germans? But they weren't there. I expected to find the SS. They were the ones we were facing. We knew 3 or 4 or 5 SS divisions. No one. And gradually I went through the cornfield. For some strange reason, the Germans had withdrawn from this area. And I got to the edge of this airfield, and I said to my soldiers, I said, look, I will go onto the airfield with my carrier and see if there's anything. Foolish thing to do, but I did it. And I drove this carrier slowly, carefully onto the airfield. No aeroplanes. No soldiers. And I got to the middle and I looked round my binoculars. I could see nothing. This is a very strange thing, I thought, because the town of Caen was just the other side of the airfield, a matter of 4 miles. I therefore withdrew from there, and I said, we'd better go round the airfield and see if there are any Germans that side. Well, once I went round, I was able to see farther down. I could see a lot of German army who were below this airfield. Why, I wondered. I was fired at a bit. We fired back. Meanwhile, the intelligence officer had been wounded in his carrier, and we were beginning to get a bit separated, and I drew them away from the airfield, and I said, now look, each of you find your own way back. I will stay here and see if I can pick up my gunner officer who I've lost. A bit confused.
How did you lose your gunner officer?
He was in another vehicle, and he was meant to be my communication back. But he was getting moved, say, half a mile away. Anyway, he withdrew on his own. He was all right. The point is that I went back and reported that this airfield was not occupied. My patrol lasted 9 hours. 9 hours in no man's land in your first week of action. I was astonished. I hadn't had anyone killed. We had been fired at. We had shot one or two Germans on the edge. Amazing.
Quite a strain, though. I mean, it must have been a
big
huge
strain.
Relief to get back.
We got back, and it was dark when we got back, and we were nearly shot because another regiment was now in our place. And I had to find my own regiment. I did in the end. We were taken off. So yes, war is a terrible thing. If somehow you find your way. And I found my CO, and he said, the first thing was, I thought you were dead, he said. It was a nice greeting. He said, anyway, we're off to an attack next morning. So all I had was a cup of tea before going back into action again. And that's what I was trained for. I had had nothing except what I carried, like a biscuit and a bully, a cup of tea for 36 hours. The astonishing thing was, later when the airfield was captured, it was discovered that on the other side of it, there were two divisions of German tanks dug in. And their intelligence reports reported that they'd seen on this day a lone British vehicle go up into the middle, and they, being well-trained soldiers, didn't disclose their position by firing, and therefore this lone vehicle reported it clear and came back. That was me. So that was quite an experience.
But you all got back safely.
Well, we did get back safely. Yeah. And to me, I still wonder why this bizarre patrol had been led on. Surely we could have sent an aeroplane over to take photographs. Surely some other way could have been done than to send five vehicles into no man's land like that.
Yeah, which with the best will in the world, anyone out there is going to hear them coming.
Well, they could see us.
Yeah.
So that was my first brush, as it were, luckily. And then, a few days later, was to be our big attack. A big attack on a feature called Hill 112.
Have you heard anything about that? Has this been going on, or was this the beginning of Hill 112?
We knew that there was this feature, Hill 112, which is just a knob in a plane, not very high. But it is said that whoever held 112 held Normandy. And the Germans, who had a very good eye for country, knew this, and they were determined to hold it. And while holding it, they had a view right down to Arromanches and right up to Caen and all over the cornfields of Normandy where we were fighting, right down to Bayeux. So they knew what they were doing. And we had a few skirmishes with them in the fields and villages round there.
What were you encountering when you say skirmishes? Were these...
Encountering. We were encountering groups of enemy who were dug in or defending a farmhouse and that sort of thing. So on the 10th of July we'd reached now. See, it's the 6th of June. We'd been fighting the whole of June, and still we hadn't got Caen. Still we hadn't got Caen. And Monty said we'd get it in the first day. Well, we didn't. And the Germans, but Monty also said, I will draw the whole of the German army onto that side, and the British army will hold them. So that the Americans right up on the right, who had landed at Cherbourg, can have a clean sweep right through and encircle the Germans. Well, the Americans, I do not wish to decry them, but they did land up there in Cherbourg, and they had a lot of trouble fighting one German division who held them up. We were fighting 10, and we were fighting the cream SS with their formidable array of Tiger tanks. And a Tiger tank was twice as big as our tank, and its tracks were as wide as that. Over a yard, our tank tracks were half that. Their armour was that thick. Ours was half that thick. They could put a missile from their famous 88mm gun. At 2,000 yards, they could shoot a tank straight through the middle, and did. So it was pretty frightening. It was decided on the 10th of July to attack Hill 112 once again. And I'll never forget, 6 battalions of the 43rd Wessex Division were drawn up. You've got 9 infantry battalions in a division. 6 were drawn up in a line, and 3 were in reserve. And we were drawn up on the edge of a woods, reading that. And we were about, this was set back about a mile or so from Hill 112. And the artillery, our own artillery, without which we would not have won the war, were splendid. They were bashing Hill 112, and they were bashing the cornfields in front, and they were firing everything they'd got in preparation for the infantry to assault. They were softening up the Germans. I remember HR, which was the time we crossed, was for 0500, which was just getting light. And we were formed up at 4:45. All hell broke loose on our leading company because our own medium guns landed on them, killing half of them, the forward troops. And I remember seeing chaps with their legs knocked off. dead men lying around. We hadn't even started the battle. Well, we had been trained that artillery shells can drop short. These did.
Why do you think that was? Was that poor intelligence or poor...
No. It's failure of ammunition. Failure of the guns to... Maybe one or two guns weren't... had the right range put on them. But these dropped short only by about 50 yards. But that's a laugh. And they're very big shells. They're as big as this desk. And I remember the company commander saying to the colonel, what shall I do? We can't go across. He said, we will go across at 5. But I've only got 6 men left. We'll go across with 6 men, he said. I will be with you, so that makes 7. And at 5 o'clock came, and we went across. And the field artillery, as the 25-pounder, they fired just in front of us like that. And we'd, of course, trained with these. And some of those fall short sometimes, but even so, they do keep the enemy's head down so that you can advance. And that is what we did. And the guns went on, and we went on. And these 6 battalions surged forwards into the cornfields, in which we knew were the SS dug in, waiting. When I say the cornfields, this was leading up to 112. We had to overcome them before reaching the hill.
Did you have any information about where exactly the SS were dug in, or was this guesswork?
It was not guesswork. We had air photographs, but they were very well camouflaged holes, and some might be dug and not occupied. Others might be occupied and covered over with corn. They were very skillful fieldcraft soldiers, and they had a lot of machine guns. Now, the German machine gun can fire. It's a belt machine gun. It can fire 900 to 1,000 rounds a minute, which is very powerful. Our own could barely do 600. And then we had magazines which you had to put on like this, with the belt of a machine gun. And that is what we were facing, those machine guns and tanks. And as the attack started, on the far right were the 5th Wiltshires, my old battalion. They had about 25% knocked out in the first half hour. Then the next battalion was the Somersets. They had 14 officers killed in the first 10 minutes. Then there was a gap, and we put our carrier platoon into that, and they got carrier turned to hold this gap. Their Bren guns, they got fired at and shot. Then came the 4th Wiltshires, my lot, and we had quite a battle in which we hand to hand by the time we got in the cornfields. Looking over to our left were 3 battalions of the next brigade, and we could see they were having a very rough time. Tiger tanks were attacking this particular chateau they were after. And we didn't realize it. But what had happened was that they hit a very hard part of the German line, which was a continuation of Hill 112. And the Dorsets... 5th Dorsets were written off. 4th Dorsets put in to help them. They were surrounded. They then were told to withdraw, and the 7th Hampshires, I think it was, went in and found them withdrawing. It was chaos, in fact. The Germans had the place under control. And they practically wiped out these 3 battalions, which all this in this battle. Wiped out this Three battalions, that's, well, best part of 2,000 men. Knocked them out there, or they withdrew. A battalion was about 600 rifles, 1,800. And that was going on.